A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning, Daniel.
I hope you're going to be decent today.
I'm always decent.
You're going to try your best.
Mm-hmm.
Try to keep up.
Right.
Hey, I want to start. We haven't done like a little trivia thing.
Okay.
And I guess there's no way to do trivia. But
not
I have a
really.
Fun fact.
Okay.
And I'm very excited to share my little fun fact.
I can tell. So go.
January 27. You are going to be amazed. Just hold on.
Okay.
January 27 of 1880. Do you know what happened? I don't want you to even guess.
No, it was
you're
a
never
going to
get it. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
On this date in 1880, Thomas Edison patented his incandescent light bulb. And that is awesome because of...
Because Renee Huff from the Lighting Corner is going to be here to talk about light bulbs today.
So when I saw that, I thought, oh, I hope Betsy doesn't
find it.
Yeah, I hoped you didn't find it too.
No.
So I wanted to get to it before you could.
Of course you did.
So we'll be talking to Renee Huff from the Lighting Corner later today.
Yep.
We'll also, on the show, give away that $100 gift certificate that we talked about last week. We're going to launch a new contest so you could win stuff that way.
Yep.
We're going to talk about paint questions.
Yeah, we have a couple of different paint questions, and one of them is about using marine varnish inside for some extra water resistance, whether it's good or bad, so we'll answer that.
We'll address that, and we'll talk about extension cords and how the wrong one might actually be damaging some of the equipment that you've got.
And that's a bummer.
But first, we're in the studio with real estate mogul and all-around genius, radio expert extraordinaire.
Thank goodness we finally have an expert.
Realtor, Roger Allen from Keller Williams Lakeshore Realty. And we're going to talk about putting your house up for sale in the wintertime.
Thank you very much, Dan. With an intro like that, I can hardly wait to hear myself talk.
I know. I just hope it, I hope you come off better than normal. I tried to build you up a little bit.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you did call
him a real estate mogul, so.
I had to look up the word mogul to make sure I was using it correctly.
Colleagues are going to wonder about that as well, but that's okay.
Anyway, I want to talk about putting your house up for sale in the winter. Now, Roger, you had emailed me and said that's not a bad idea.
No, it's not.
And at first I discounted it.
Well, but that's the craziest thing I've ever heard, because I've never heard anyone say winter is a good time to put your house up for sale. It's always spring, summer, maybe fall, but you're getting a little iffy. So really, winter? I mean, come
on. Really, really winter. I've got nine quick reasons that we'll run through in a hurry here, but pay attention because they are worthwhile. Come spring, the real estate market's going to be flooded with buyers, just like it is every spring. But right now, there are fewer people looking, giving you a better chance, if you want to buy, to get what you want. Now, turn that back on the sellers.
Mm-hmm.
If a buyer is willing to get out and look for a house at this time of the year, they have to be serious.
Mm-hmm.
Most winter buyers are working against some sort of a deadline. You won't be bothered by window shoppers.
What do you mean they're working against some sort of a deadline?
Job change. Contract runs out on their house. Their lease runs out if they happen to be renters. Maybe babies do. I mean, you know, it's
so if you're looking in the winter, you're serious.
There's a reason.
That's what you're getting at.
Yeah. So from a seller standpoint, you won't get a lot of window shoppers. You're going to get serious buyers.
Right.
Demand right now in West Michigan is really, really strong, as it has been for the last couple of years. Every realtor that's really engaged with the market right now has a list of buyers as long as his or her arm. I certainly do. And they're just itching to get into something new and exciting.
Now, you mentioned that last time you were here, you talked about how there's so many buyers and just not enough inventory out there.
Right.
And that's where we're still at.
That's gotten worse,
as
a matter of fact.
Okay.
Just looking at what we call the Holland-Saugatuck area of our MLS, Multiple Listing Service, since a high point on September 1, of 532 single-family homes for sale, we've dropped 40%.
Holy smokes.
It's just amazing how the inventory has dropped off this winter.
Okay.
Which means, you know, the number of buyers hasn't dropped off that dramatically because of the change of seasons. People are still looking for houses. People still have to move. Life events happen in the wintertime. Babies get born, divorces happen. Whatever life events happen in the wintertime as well as the summertime. So the buyers are still there. It's just the inventory is low.
Okay.
Well, we live in the great United States of America where the economic law of supply and demand always, always works.
Mm-hmm.
And it works in real estate. It works in real estate right now. The demand is very high. The supply is very low. That's
so
a good thing
prices
for sellers. Prices are coming up.
Okay.
Not dramatically.
All right.
But there have been movements in the pricing structure showing that the average price for a home in West Michigan is inching upward.
Okay.
Not, again, not dramatically. It's not that a buyer needs to be afraid of the fact that prices are going up. But from a seller standpoint, again, and that's what we're talking about, sell your home in the wintertime? Right now is a good time. We know that come spring, the supply is going to increase just because everybody thinks that's what they should do. Mm-hmm. But as the supply increases, what happens to the price?
Right.
It goes down. So if you're selling and you want to get the most out of your house, do it now.
All right. So there's a couple good reasons. What else you got?
Bring us to the next point. The process is going to be quicker. Lenders are not as busy. Realtors, unfortunately, are not as busy.
Mm-hmm. That's why you're here.
That's why I'm here. Right. I can afford to do this every once in a while. I can give you my full attention right now as a seller. I can help you get your house ready to sell. Oh, that brings up a great point. It's easier to sell a house in the wintertime. You know why?
No, I would like to know why.
You don't have to worry about mowing the lawn, trimming the bushes.
Well, it's certainly harder to mow the lawn.
Anything. Anything having to do with landscaping. I mean, yeah, if there's snow, shovel it, for crying out loud.
Yeah, right. Gotcha.
But that's it.
But what about the rest of the curb appeal of your home? We always harp on, you know, make sure that the outside looks good, your porch
Betsy,
is this.
Betsy, you harp on it. I just gently bring it up.
Right.
Anyway.
But I'm just wondering.
When
y'all
get done, I'm, you know, done.
Well, I'm wondering for, you know, a seller, that's things that are usually in their minds. What happens in the wintertime? You can't go paint. You're probably not going to be out there with a hammer fixing things. So do you just let these things slide?
Let's assume we did that last fall.
Because we were looking ahead.
No, obviously, there are things you can't do in the wintertime. Mm. But
again, with the supply being down,
and, you know.
Which is another, well, oh, I should not say that.
Okay, but good. Another, I'm glad you didn't.
Another good reason to sell is that you don't have to maybe do some of this stuff.
Well
that's what
go.
I was thinking, but I didn't say it for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I did. So those are all good reasons. Yeah. And we're talking with Roger Allen from Lakeshore Keller Williams Realty in Holland on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show about reasons to sell your house now in the winter. Roger's given us a bunch of them, and I know you've got more because you said there were nine, and I've only counted like three or four.
Yeah, we've been through four or five. But here's a big one. There is no time like the present. I mean, you know, let's not get too serious about this, but when's the last time you procrastinated on something you knew you should do and it worked out? It doesn't.
Right.
Procrastination is never a good thing.
Right. Right.
So if you're going to do it, if you have to do it now. Interest rates are still low. We haven't talked about interest rates yet. Interest rates have been at historic lows for the last over a year, at least. They're not at historic lows anymore. Mm-hmm. They have begun to creep upward. We've been hearing warnings about this for a very long time.
Right.
But they are beginning to creep upward. I checked very recently with one popular lender, and their published rate on a 30-year fixed conventional mortgage is 4.125. In places, you can find rates still under 4, but in general, you're 4 or a little bit over. So I got to thinking, okay, let's say I want to buy a $200,000 house. What's my payment going to be? It's still less than $1,000 a month.
That's not bad at all.
There are a lot of things, maybe just in quick summary. You tell me you want to wait till spring because you think you'll get more money out of your house. I'll remind you, gently, of course, of these two most important factors. Statistically, you'll get more money in the winter, and supply will definitely go up this spring because of those few people who don't take my advice. And that means prices will come down.
Roger, I'm assuming that you are ready to help anybody out there who's looking to list their home right now.
Absolutely.
And if they do want to get in touch with you, how's the best way to do that?
Just call Keller Williams Lakeshore in Holland and ask for Roger.
All right. And I'm sure that if Roger's not available, there's all kinds of people there ready to help.
We have over 30 agents in our office, and they are all Keller Williams trained and Keller Williams good.
So they're all real estate moguls. You're really not special, like I tried to set out from the beginning. You're just old.
I'm special because I'm me, and I'm just going to ignore that comment.
No, wait. Exactly. I have one last quick question. Oh. Don't me.
Sorry.
Okay, Roger, do you just do real estate in the Holland area, or, you know, people listening in Grand Rapids and the outskirts, can you help them as well?
I am very comfortable working in the Grand Rapids market. Statistically, I don't track the Grand Rapids market as much as I do the Holland market, but things are the same in Grand Rapids as they are in Holland. We have a huge Keller Williams office in Grand Rapids, actually two of them, one on the east side, one on the north side, and one in Granville, for that matter. I mean, Keller Williams is all over the place.
Excellent. Okay. Roger, thanks for taking time to be with us, putting up with some of my jabs at your age and other things.
Daniel, you and I have known each other for a very long time. It's always a pleasure.
That's why I can make fun of you.
Uh-huh.
When we're off the air, Roger makes fun of me.
Yes.
He's a little bit smarter than I am.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Betsy, it's been great.
Now, all right. Who out there wants to wreck power tools?
Not I.
Or maybe start a really cool fire?
No.
Anyway, all it really takes is using the wrong extension cord. For those of you not keen on either of those options, stick around. We've got the scoop on extension cords.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
So, Betsy, a lot of my time at Repco Light, 20 years now.
20
years at
Repco
Light. And a lot of it was spent working the store.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that would come up all the time is whether or not it was a really good idea to use exterior paint inside. Don't say anything. Because we're going to talk about whether it is a good idea or not in the next segment. People are always concerned about moisture problems.
Right.
So if we use this exterior paint, it's going to be the best situation solver ever.
Right.
And we'll tell you whether it is or not next segment.
Yes. You're also going to want to stick around for segment four today, because we're going to talk about how light bulbs can really make or break a room. And we're going to announce the winner of last week's contest. And we're also going to tell you about a new contest.
Exactly. But before we get to that, let's right now talk about something that everybody has in their home. And there's a very good chance that most of us are using it incorrectly, at least at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about are extension cords. Now, for me personally, this will come as no surprise to anybody who's ever listened to the show, but I don't always make the best decisions sometimes. I learn by a lot of experiences.
Uh-huh.
Normally they're bad experiences, and then I learn a lot.
Right.
But anyway, with extension cords, one of my things has always been to buy an extension cord based on two determining factors: the length of the cord, the longest one I could possibly find,
uh-huh,
at the lowest possible price.
Right.
Once I would find that, I'd figure I'd struck gold, throw that in my cart, and I'm off. But there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Extension cords vary, and so do the power requirements of many of the tools that we use.
Mm-hmm.
Using the wrong extension cord for your tools can impact their performance, it can damage them over time, and it can even create a fire hazard if all of the right conditions are in place.
Right. Now, when choosing a cord, the first thing to consider are the amps that are required by the equipment or tool that you're going to be using. So generally speaking, you know, a Dremel type of tool, you're looking at 2 to 4 amps. An electric drill, you're probably looking at 6 to 10. And a circular saw or something like that, you're about 13 to 15 amps.
So you need to consider that. But the next thing to consider is how much the electrical cord can handle, how much load that can handle.
Right. There are two main factors here, and that's the cord length and the actual thickness of the wire of the cord.
Now, personally, I would always try, like I said, to buy the longest cord I could find and use it for every project.
Yes.
That was my plan. I mean, if I've got 100 feet of cord, that
right,
covers me in almost every situation.
Oh, yeah.
That was my thought.
Yep.
The problem is there's something called resistance, which leads to voltage drop.
Oh, no. Here comes a Science Saturday segment.
It's a Science Saturday segment. No, this is very interesting.
Yes.
So just ride with me here for a second.
Yep.
See, all wires have some degree of resistance. You know, as electrical current flows through, it dissipates as it travels the length of the wire. The dissipated energy is expelled in the form of heat.
Yes.
Are you tracking so far?
Yes, Professor.
You can handle this, Betsy?
Yes.
All right. Obviously, since energy is lost as it meets resistance, less of it reaches the equipment that you're trying to power.
Right.
And this phenomena?
Yes.
Phenomena. Da, 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 da. Phenomena. Right? Is that how that works? Anyway, that's called voltage drop. Let's just get serious again, Betsy.
Yes, okay.
Quit dragging us down.
Uh-huh.
Over short distances, you really don't notice much of that at all. But over longer distances, your tools, your equipment, they're not able to run at full speed. Now, I've noticed this.
Mm-hmm.
If I plug it directly into the wall outlet, everything works fine.
Yes.
But if I plug it into my extension cord, you know, 4 football fields away from the power outlet,
yes.
It's like squirrels are pedaling little bicycles trying to power my tools.
Oh, that is such a fun thought.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
But actually, worse, I could be damaging the tools, which is probably why I have very few nice things
yes.
when I think about it.
You're right. So the length of the wire really is a big deal. You need to be aware of that. And the way around all of this is just adjusting the thickness or the gauge of that wire. So the thicker the wire, the less resistance it's going to offer. The less resistance means full power over that longer distance. So you can get out the 100 feet mm-hmm. and still get the full power. Now, gauge is usually marked on the package or even on the cord itself in some instances.
Right. So get your cords out right now, real quick. We'll wait. Well, we don't have much time to wait. So
no.
just do this later. But
right.
you can find it right on the cord.
Yeah. And it's usually in the form of a fraction. So 14 over 3, 12 over 3, and the 14 or the 12 means that that's the gauge, and the 3 is how many conductor wires are going to be in that little bundle.
Right. Now, the important thing to gather here is that the thicker the wire or the higher the gauge, the lower the number. It's a little bit like golf.
It's backwards.
Right. So 12 is actually a thicker wire.
Right. It's better.
Better for conducting, mm-hmm. you know, electricity over a longer distance
right.
than a 14 gauge would be.
Yes.
So thicker the gauge, lower the number. Okay, that's the Science Saturday overview of extension cords.
Mm.
But since this is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, let's get to some practical information and talk about which cord is right for you.
Right.
Now, all of that depends on the factors that we just got done talking about. The amps required by your equipment
yep.
and the distance that you need to run the cord.
Yes.
But still, we can make some generic recommendations.
Right.
And the first one is this: own several different cords.
Yes.
Don't buy one super long cord and try to use it for everything.
Right. It's not convenient, and it's also not efficient. And last, it could be really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a 100-foot cord and coil it up, all of that heat loss that you experience when you have the voltage drop can actually cause the cord to start on fire.
Especially if you're using it on tools that require more amps than that cord is able to carry over that long distance. So buy a number of different cords.
Yeah.
Buy a couple 25-foot cords. Buy a 50-foot cord. Maybe a 100-foot cord
mm-hmm.
if you have the need for something like that.
Right. And also buy bigger gauge extension cords if possible. Yes, we are aware that they are more expensive, but that's what you really want to be investing in. And maybe
because they'll work for every project.
Right.
Right.
Buy
you don't have to worry that it's too big of a gauge for
uh-huh.
this project.
It can never be too big of a gauge.
Well, it sometimes can be really awkward to haul around.
Well, yes.
If you go crazy.
Well, that's why you only haul around the 25-foot one.
Yeah, exactly. But buy the biggest gauge that you can afford and
right.
make that work. And
yep.
here's just a little overview to kind of hopefully put it in perspective. A 25-foot, 14-gauge extension cord is going to deliver up to 15 amps, which means you can run drills, reciprocating saws, miter saws, even many circular saws and smaller little bench saws, things like that.
Right.
If you need 50-foot to deliver that same load, then you're going to need to bump up to a 12-gauge cord. 50-foot of 12-gauge cord is going to power most of the things that
right.
homeowners use on a regular basis.
Right.
If you need more than that, you need 100 feet of cord, then you need to bump up to a 10 gauge.
Yes, and it just goes from there. And yes, there are other questions that we could be answering right now. You know, what happens if you put a bunch of them together? Is that okay?
I really want to know if that's a very good idea or a very bad idea. I have my
suspicions.
Yes. But we'll dig into that on another episode.
Right. Right now, all we wanted was for everyone to understand that there are certain extension cords for certain jobs and that you don't want to just buy whatever extension cord.
Right. Anyway, we've got to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about using exterior paint inside. And
bad
whether
idea.
Or not that's, well, there, tip that hand. We'll have to figure something else to talk about when we come back. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, we're glad you're back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Now, just ahead, we're going to be in the studio with Renee Huff from the Lighting Corner, and we're going to talk about how all the best decorating in the world can really go south fast if you put in the wrong light bulb.
And we'll also tell you the winner of last week's kitchen cabinet contest. That's coming up soon, but right now, we've got paint questions to talk about.
Yes, we do.
And a new contest that we want to explain.
Yes.
Very, very briefly.
But we have to start with the questions first.
Yes. So the first question comes from a listener who who's trying to redo her kitchen, and she's stuck.
Yes.
Completely stuck. Doesn't know what to do. She can't get started with making any of the choices because she can't find a paint color that she loves. Mm-hmm. She wants to know what she needs to do to find that perfect color so she can move ahead with the project.
Right.
Now, this is a very common dilemma. It happens all the time. We run into this every single day in the store. Somebody is struggling with this. I can't find the right color, and I can't get anything else moving on my project. What do I do?
Right. The thing that people don't realize is that paint is actually the last step that you should be doing in any project like this.
It seems counterintuitive. We always want to start at the color rack.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the last place you should go. And there's a very simple reason.
Mm.
Paint is infinitely adjustable.
Right.
Things like your flooring are not infinitely adjustable.
There are only so many options
exactly.
and so many colors.
Countertops are the same thing.
Yep.
Kitchen cabinets, you find a style you like, there's, you know, if it's painted, there's a full range of colors.
Right, right.
But if it's stained, you're going to have a certain range that you're going to kind of work in. Paint colors, on the other hand, like we said, infinitely adjustable. Just think of this. Every company has thousands and thousands of color chips, and every single one of those chips can be adjusted in thousands and thousands of different ways to bring out different tones.
And now that you've freaked everybody out.
Yeah, I know. When you think about the thousands of colors on a display,
right,
people,
and people
get paralyzed.
Yep.
Now I just told you there are millions of options out there, limitless options. But really, you don't need to worry about that. That's what we'll help you with.
Yes.
But the first thing you need to do to answer this question for our listener, the first thing you need to do is to quit looking at the paint chips right now and start figuring out some of the bigger ticket items in your kitchen.
Yeah.
If you need to replace the floor, find a floor that you like. If you need to redo your countertops, find countertop samples that you like.
Right.
Get that stuff nailed down. Get your cabinets nailed down. Once you've got these big ticket items figured out, now bring those samples in and we will help you find the perfect paint very, very quickly and very easily. You won't have to stand at the color rack spending days and days. We'll be able to help you figure it out very, very quickly.
Right. We're talking about some paint questions that we've recently gotten on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show. And the next question is really a great one. It comes from a listener who has concerns about her windowsills. She has condensation from her windows that's dripping onto the sills, and she's concerned about damaging the finish. Now, her plan is to go to a marine varnish, something that's used for boats, because she figures it's going to be the most water-resistant coating that she can buy.
Now, we get this question all the time, just like the other one.
Yep.
And in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the idea is this. People have a situation where there's a high moisture problem, let's say, in a home, whether it's a bathroom where there's a lot of moisture going on.
Or a kitchen.
Or
I've
a
heard
kitchen.
Of this in a kitchen. Yep.
If you spill a lot. Or the trim, like the windowsills and stuff like that.
Right.
And so with all that moisture, the tendency is to think, let's just put an exterior coating there. Because exterior coatings hold up to snow and to rain.
Mm-hmm.
Marine coatings, in this instance, hold up to water and all of that crazy stuff. And if it can hold up to that, it should be awesome in my bathroom or awesome on my windowsills. But there's a problem with that.
Yeah, what people don't realize is there are actually chemicals and things that they put into exterior paint that you don't want in high quantities in your home. They off-gas, and you don't want to be inhaling any of that. So that's the first reason that that's a really bad idea.
Right. Anytime you have off-gassing of any kind, you don't want to be inhaling that.
No, you don't.
I don't know what you're laughing about.
Did you take
this into a non-classy area?
I could see the smirk on your
face.
There
is no smirk.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you just made that really not classy, and you kind of embarrassed all of us.
Mm.
Thanks a lot, Betsy.
Uh-huh.
So the off-gassing that Betsy mentioned, that's an issue. You know, the mold and the mildew sides that are in the products are concerns.
Yes.
But the other problem with exterior coatings used inside is that exterior coatings are made somewhat softer than interior coatings. And the reason is they're supposed to be more flexible because there's so much more going on. When the sun heats things up, things expand. When things contract, when it gets cold, the coating needs to be able to move with that. So exterior coatings are made specifically to flex when all of these things happen, when these weather conditions occur. Interior coatings don't need to go through all of that, so they can be made much harder. So actually, by using an interior coating inside, in particular, in this situation, on the windowsills, an interior polyurethane is going to be harder and more durable than any kind of exterior product that you would want to put inside.
Yes, but on the flip side of that, let's remind people that you don't want to use an interior coating on the bottom of your boat.
Right, because the idea is that, oh, if it's really hard and really amazing, maybe I should use that outside. No, that doesn't work because it's too hard. When the surfaces expand and contract, it's brittle and it cracks and you have problems.
Right. Now, there are a handful of options out there that are interior, exterior products, so that's okay. But anything else should only be used in the area that it's specified, either interior or exterior.
We hope that helps our two listeners with their questions. And if anyone else has a question, we'd love to hear it. And that brings us to our next Facebook contest. Right now, we've got a post on our Facebook page asking for questions. Just go there and leave your question in the comments. If we answer your question next week on the show, we'll get you a $50 gift certificate to Repcolite Port City Paints. It's that easy. So go there right now and start asking questions and go ahead and ask as many as you want.
Right. We've got to take a break, but when we come back, there's a lot more that should go into your decision to buy a particular light bulb than just the price. We'll tell you what you need to know just ahead. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repcolite Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, we've had quite a show today. It's been kind of fun.
Yes.
It's always fun.
Yeah, I always enjoy it.
Yeah, hopefully everybody else likes it too. There's always probably a couple people who don't like it.
Well, maybe they like just certain segments, or they prefer
certain segments. The segments where I'm stronger, where I shine brighter.
Right, that is...
Which is really most of the segments.
Well, you've had a big day today, haven't
you? I have. I've been very on my game.
Yes. Well, you still have one more segment to get through.
We do. But if you missed any of my episode... par excellence, which I think I just screwed up.
Yes, you did.
Anyway, you can find it online at repcolite.com. We've got all the episodes there, and you can mark my progress in achieving radio stardom.
Right. Well, we'll see how you do in this last segment, because we are joined by Renee Huff from the Lighting Corner, and today we want to talk about light bulbs.
And while you may think that you know everything there is to know about light bulbs, there's a lot more out there to know.
Right.
And Renee's going to help us. Renee? Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Now, light bulbs. It's hard for me to believe that something so small and traditionally inexpensive could play such a big role in the atmosphere in our homes. Not just how we see things, but the actual atmosphere, how we feel about a space. But these things do play that big of a role, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
So why don't we dig into that a little bit? And let's just start by going through some of the common light bulbs and what we get out of each one. And I guess let's start that conversation with incandescent bulbs. Now, I know they're still out there, but they're going away.
Right. The typical bulb shape called an A19, if you want to be technical, has pretty much gone away in the 40-watt, 60-watt, 75-watt, 100-watt. Those are no more. Mm-hmm. The government has eliminated the manufacture of those in the United States. You may still be able to get some if they're made overseas. However, the new halogen equivalents are just as good of an option. They don't last long. They're kind of hot. But instead of a 100-watt bulb, now you have a 72. So those work great, and you can get them at any local store.
Okay. So we've got halogen replacing incandescent.
Right.
Then let's talk about my favorite light bulb of all time. The swirly CFLs.
Yes. Compact fluorescent lights.
The ones where we turn it on. And you never want to be in an emergency and need light with one of these things. You turn them on and you got to ask the burglar or the intruder, just give me 2 minutes here.
Right.
Let the light be up.
So I can see you.
And then we'll have this out and we'll figure out what we're doing. But
oh, wait, it was a possum.
I hate
those. He looked really angry.
He did. Talk about those. I mean, what's the benefit of those? Who even wants those?
Right. Well, you know, they're the precursor to the LED. Initially thought they were a fantastic idea. They still are a good idea in some situations.
I would love to know what those situations are.
So a CFL is just a curled up long tube like you see in shops and manufacturing places and et cetera, in your garage.
Sure.
They operate the same way, so they do take a few minutes to warm up. There's gas gases in there that have to get excited. It's actually called exciting the gas.
Really?
So yes, it is. Very interesting.
So you're going to say to the burn cooler, excuse me while my gas is excited.
I don't know that I'm going to say that. Yes. I feel uncomfortable saying that even now.
Yeah. But once you get those turned on for a couple of minutes, they're good to go for a long period of time. So some folks come in complaining that, you know, this bulb was supposed to last 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, whatever.
Right.
And it only lasted a year and a half. They're very frustrated. I agree. What those numbers were originally based on was some really incorrect examples. They were looking at a shop that leaves them on for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, mm-hmm. and they last for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't do that in our house. Those aren't on all day, every day.
My children do. The lights go on and they never go off.
Then put CFLs in their bedrooms. But,
so you're saying if we'd leave it on?
They last. They're damaged when you let the little neutrons and all those thingies in there de-excite, and then when you turn them off, and then mm-hmm. you turn them back on, and they have to get excited again, and then you turn them off, and they have to calm down again, and then you turn. You're damaging it. You're torturing that bulb, so they don't last long. And we've been trained in our house, turn off the light when you leave the room.
Right.
Turn the light on when you come in. So stop doing that. They work great as a low energy use bulb. Say a 26 watt CFL can be like 150 watt equivalent, like an old incandescent. Very, very
mm-hmm.
bright.
Mm-hmm.
And they give a 360 degree beam spread too, which does a great job of lighting a whole area instead of like cut off in half.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
So put them in, say, Grandma and Grandpa's kitchen and tell Grandma and Grandpa, when you get up in the morning, turn this light on. Leave it on. Don't turn it off till you go to bed. Those bulbs are going to last, and they aren't going to use much energy, 26 watts a piece. You can pick any color, so you can get a whiter color, and they do a terrific job in certain circumstances. So, yeah.
Well, I think that would be the perfect solution for the children's rooms, because it's a losing battle.
Right.
I mean, it is so annoying.
Mm-hmm.
We've had so many arguments because we get ready to go to bed or we go anywhere, and the lights everywhere are on. Everywhere they go, they turn them on. I'll just switch them to those, and we're actually doing good then.
There you go. A couple of tips. Do not use them in cold. So if you have them in your garage, which tons of people do, switch to an LED.
Okay.
Those are an instant on. CFLs don't like cold weather. So the colder it is, the longer it's going to take them to come on.
All right.
Oh, and we don't live in Florida or Arizona. So those poor little bulbs in Michigan.
Right.
So that's CFLs. LEDs. Let's talk about those real quick.
Ah, LED, light emitting diode. It's a computer chip.
Okay.
Not all computer chips are made equally.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So you do want a good one. You really do get what you pay for, especially with an LED. There are three parts to an LED. One is the computer chip. That's important. The second is the thermal distribution system. You don't want that to overheat. It's a computer. It's no longer this gassy thing or having little burning filaments.
Mm-hmm.
It's a computer. So you, just like your laptop or whatever, it needs air. If you overheat it, the motherboard is gone.
Okay.
So there you go. And then you need a driver, a transformer per se, to make the bulb work. It's the motor. Those components all need to be decent quality or you aren't going to get a bulb that lasts. So I do get a lot of people coming in saying, I hate LED bulbs. They don't last like you say. I said, well, where did you get your LED bulbs? Let me know. Oh, that's why.
Okay.
Yeah.
You need to try some of mine. I do have a 3-year warranty, 5-year warranty, but that's just like the first chunk. The bulb is really going to last, depending on which bulb you buy, between 15 years and say 25. I even have bulbs that'll last like 40 years.
Holy
and how much
smokes.
Do they run?
It depends on the length of time. It depends on
do
whether
I have to
you
take
choose
a, loan
a dimmable
out for this bulb?
bulb. Right. The least expensive LED bulbs I have that'll just like go in your normal lamp or your bath fixture, or your ceiling light, $12.95 for a 4-pack.
Oh, for a 4-pack?
Yeah. So very inexpensive.
$12.95.
$12.95.
Okay.
No,
not
$1,000.
No, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
The $1,200 thing, I wouldn't.
Right.
I'd have a hard time justifying. Because I drop bulbs as I put them in sometimes.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to spend that kind of money and trust myself. I'd have to hire out the installation.
Can I get an electrician to come and put in light bulbs for me?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, and we're in the studio with Renee Huff. She's talking about light bulbs, the different kinds that are out there, which ones are the right ones to be choosing. When it comes to the actual color of the light that they emit, what impact do these things have on, like, our furniture and our curtains and
our
paint color
colors.
And things like that?
They can make or break a room. You can get the most beautiful paints and mm-hmm. furniture and flooring and tile, and it looks horrible in the wrong color lights. So it's crucial that you figure out, you know, what kind of a look do I want? What colors am I using? Am I using cool colors like turquoise, cool grays, mm-hmm. nice crisp whites? Then you want a bulb that has a little bit whiter color. I would start at 3000 Kelvin temperature. It's important to get the numbers, not something that just says cool white or daylight or whatever. Look at right. the numbers. Start at 3000. That's still a little bit warm. Mm-hmm. I would go with maybe a 3500. You can mm-hmm. go up into the 4100. It depends on how crisp you want that to be. And those can even add a little blue to the room if you get really high numbers.
Okay. So what if you've got a lot of natural wood tones in your home? I'm assuming that you'd want a warmer color on your light. But I guess what temperature would that be? What would you recommend?
You want to stay probably with a 2700 Kelvin temperature bulb. That's a traditional incandescent color. They make an LED that looks identical to your incandescent and can really enhance the warmth of okay. that room. A bedroom is a great place to use a warmer color bulb, where a kitchen or a laundry, really it's helpful to have that whiter color, especially mm-hmm. in a closet or a laundry. I always advise using a 3,000, 3,500 or even higher in those spaces, because you can tell the difference between black mm-hmm. pants, navy blue pants, charcoal gray. Very easy to see those colors. Unless you're using a yellow bulb, that's not right. a great idea in those spaces.
Right. As you said, it really can make or break a room. So, you know, now as we get to the end of this interview and the end of the time that we've got, I guess I'm just curious, since it does make or break a room, do you help people choose the right lights? And if you do, at what point do you get involved with that? You know, do you talk to them as they're getting ready to paint? Do you talk to them after they've got paint on their walls? Any of these things?
Typically, after the paint is chosen, I plan out entire housefuls of lighting or just a room, depending on what someone's in looking for. And one of the first questions I ask, other than the size of the room and the height of the ceiling, is what color are your walls? What color is your furniture and your mm-hmm. carpet? What look are you going for? Because there's a lot of choices to make in bulbs now that you wouldn't expect. You cannot just walk in a store and grab a bulb and walk out.
Perfect. So, Renee, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or want to stop out and mm-hmm. get help, how do they do that? What's the best way?
Well, probably stop in at one of our stores. We're at Chicago Drive in Granville, and then on Jackson Street in Grand Haven. So mm-hmm. we have two locations. We have a terrific website that does feature mostly lights, fans. We have furniture, paintings, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So the light bulbs are primarily in our stores. You can call us on the phone, too, and we'll give you as much advice as possible. But we hope you'll stop in to see us.
Renee Huff, thanks for taking time to be with us.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Well, I hope everybody out there is sitting down, because I have some pretty bad news. It's pretty significant.
Really? Is yeah. everyone going to need a tissue?
They're going to, because that's all the time we've got today. The show is officially over. You're not going to be hearing our uplifting voices until next week, Saturday.
Right,
but again,
of course.
As I said at the beginning of this segment, if you want to hear more episodes and just to get you by until next week, you can find them all at repcolite.com.
Right. Go check those out. And don't forget to stay in touch with us on Facebook. Now, we've got the newest contest posted up there. Just ask us a question and we'll put one of them on air. And if we do use yours, you're going to get a $50 gift certificate to Repcolite. Now, let's give away the prize from last week. That was the $100 gift mm-hmm. certificate to redo whatever, but we're hoping it's all those kitchen cabinets that we got
right.
photos
we
of
got
last
tons
week.
Tons of photos.
Yes.
There was a lot of interaction. We had a lot of fun with it, and we want to see more of that
yeah.
with these questions that we're looking for next week.
Absolutely.
But the winner for this week's $100 gift certificate to Repco Light Paints is Patty and Mike Markwart, M-A-R-K-W-A-R-T. And I'm not sure how to say your last name. I tried really hard. So if I screwed it up, I apologize. That's how Betsy said to pronounce it.
Right.
So you can direct your mail to her.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Patty and Mike, you're the winners of our $100 gift certificate. We will be in touch with you via Facebook to kind of arrange the best way to get you that gift certificate.
Right.
For the rest of you, get out there and have a productive Saturday. Do some painting. It's always good for your soul.
Right.
And there's a Repco Light or Port City Paint Store right near you, and we're open till 3 o'clock. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And we'll bring light to your darkest situations, illuminating your path forward.
Oh, good grief.
Showing you the way.
Were you a
I'm
drama
still
pontificating major in
here.
College?
I am a drama queen in real life. That's bigger than that.
Of course you are.
Thanks for listening.